Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing podcast. You know, we have these things called ePods, and it's when we have an opportunity to go out and do live podcasting at conferences. And I had the opportunity to meet our guest today, and we interviewed him at this big conference, and there was just something about him. You know, and I know all of you have experienced that when there's just something about somebody and you're like either this person is just doing something truly unique and different, or they're very genuine. And Amit Dogra today, our guest, is both. So not only is he a genuinely like good person, and you can feel that very quickly, but what they do is really, really cool, unique, and different. So I wanted to bring him on the Top Advisor Marketing Show and talk a little bit about what he does, a little bit about his history, and a little bit about his company. So Amit, welcome to the show, man.
Matt, thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so you are the CEO at Third Seven Advisors. What I'd like for you to do is to just give us a brief history of how you have gotten to where you are, because it's a great story. Like, I love your trajectory because it really puts a light on who you are and what makes what Third Seven does truly cool.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, and happy to tell the story. I'll even step back a little bit further into the glory days of being a senior at college, which is where I sort of decided on entering the financial services industry. I'm really going to date myself with some of this conversation. So, you know, it's a trip down memory lane, but it's a trip down old man lane at the same time. So I remember being in college, and it was a Friday night, talking to a friend of mine, and it was 10 o'clock getting ready to go out, and the phone rang, and it's a good friend who had already graduated a year ahead of me. And I said, "Hey, bud, what are you doing?" And he said, "Oh, I'm about to head home." And I said, "Pat, it's Friday night. What do you mean you're going home?" And he said, "Well, I work. It's 10 o'clock. Shouldn't you be going out?" And he said, "I work till 10 o'clock every night." He said, "You know, this is what we do in this investment banking world." Now, mind you, I was a few weeks away from Super Saturday in New York, about to embark in that same journey. And I said to myself, "Oh, boy, is this really what I want to do?" Hung up the phone, went out like a good college kid should. But then the next week, I was going to the computer lab, if you remember what those things were.
Oh, I remember.
I'm not sure if everyone will, but I'm going to the computer lab, and there was a flyer on the window of one of the conference rooms that said, "Looking for work-life balance. Want to do more than fax and FedEx in your first job, come learn more about SEI." And I literally, Matt, ripped the flyer off the wall and said, "This is exactly what I'm looking for." And so I took a job in Oaks, Pennsylvania, which is right outside of King of Prussia, next to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, and said, "You know what? If it stinks at worst, you know, I'm a guy originally from North Jersey. I'll move back in with my parents and I'll commute to New York." Long story short, I've been in the great Commonwealth for over 20 years. And haven't left. And it was a great career move. Gave me a great opportunity to see the financial services from the inside out, from an operational perspective, from a wholesaler perspective, from an asset management perspective. And along the way, I've cobbled the ability to look at our industry from different viewpoints, from a wholesaler product standpoint, from a advisor standpoint, and now from a management standpoint, from a consulting standpoint as well, and from a management standpoint. And I think it served me really well to give me a rounded look at what advisors think, what clients think, what management thinks, what people who are products providers to our industry think. It's really shaped my personal point of view as to what's important. And the best part is I've also been able to gather great mentors along the way, officially or unofficially, who've also shaped my point of view and spent a lot of time trying to continue to harness being a good leader, recognizing that you never arrive. It's just like anything else. You have to constantly work at it. So I've been blessed with a variety of roles in my career and various opportunities that have had a meaningful impact to get me to where I am today.
So you have a big scope of things that you are bringing to this position, but when you really break it down, like, who do you work with? What is your specialty? What does an ideal client for Third Seven look like?
Yeah, so we're more B2B. And what I mean by that is we work through the advisor to access the end client. We don't really work through the end client at all from the advisory perspective. Our job is to create a compelling reason why an advisor would want to affiliate with Third Seven Advisors. That's what our goal is. And we think we've created a unique and compelling platform that attracts sophisticated advisors who work with sophisticated clients. Now, that's a mouthful. What does that mean, Matt? Because our true differentiation is in the alternatives bucket, which is the fastest growing segment of the investment industry, more specifically in the direct private investing, which is also the fastest growing alternative segment, whether you're an advisor or a family office, which are our targets, we specialize in that. And that is through our sister company, Third Seven Capital, that we're able to get access to early stage direct deals. Think about being on the, many of us have seen the show Shark Tank with Mark Cuban on it, where you have these emerging companies that no one's ever heard of, and they have, it's a great idea, and they're trying to get their idea to grow and get access to capital. The problem with the shows like Shark Tank is the problem with private equity funds is that they're trying to go ahead and cannibalize the business and go ahead and ask for 51% of the company. And now this entrepreneur who had a great idea becomes an employee at his own company. Not very compelling to many entrepreneurs. We offer an alternative. We say, hey, look, we think you've got a great idea. We'll help you do the cap raise and we'll take an advisory fee. And yes, we'll own a portion of the company, but you maintain control. Those unique early stage interesting companies really showcase well with advisors and clients alike who want a piece of that pre-IPO market, that next great idea. We also couple it with late stage direct investing through Third Seven Ventures. And Third Seven Ventures is late stage companies. So think about Airbnb, think about Spotify, think about Uber, Lyft, Dayday, which is the Chinese rideshare application. We have access to all of these transactions in the secondary market, also affectionately known as unicorns. So if you want something a little bit less risky, but still want that IPO feel where you can get a great return, maybe not the complete home run that you would in an early stage, we have access to that. So when you talk to advisors and you talk to clients, you know, what we're doing is we're putting the investments back in investing, the excitement about it. Because when you're at a cocktail party or now it's springtime when you're on the soccer field or whatever, while planning is important, people don't talk about their estate plan. They don't talk about their financial plan. They want to talk about something exciting. And that's what this industry was found on, unique, interesting ideas. And that's what we're giving them, is the opportunity to talk about them. And we found that the right advisors have the right clients who are find it a story that resonates and something that they want access to. Probably the most interesting point, I'll close with this, Matt, is it's something that they were promised if you came from a wirehouse, that you would get access to direct IPOs, but it never materialized. And if you were at a regional IBD, you probably never were able to get it. And if you're an independent RIA today, same thing. You weren't able, you wouldn't even know how to begin to access direct investing. We target all three of those areas, as well as family offices, to give them access to direct investing where they can be part of the cap table and say that they own a piece of something exciting. And even if it's a small percentage, it's still the 5% that they care the most about.
Yeah. Now, how do you get this word out? So we know who you're looking to communicate with, but what sort of ways do you bring this thought leadership, these new ideas to advisors so that they'll either do business with you or the ones that you already have who do business with you? How do you educate them on like these new opportunities?
Yeah, it's actually very timely that you ask. I literally just got back this week from Panama, the country, not the city, where I was speaking at the Elite RIA and Family Office Conference. And they asked me to speak in two variations. One is an emerging, what is it? How do you become a successful emerging RIA aggregator? And then the second was education on private equity. And so what I did was I spoke for a half an hour on educating advisors, family offices around the different sort of investing models. Because what I have found is that there is a lot of miseducation around it or misunderstanding around direct investing. People think direct investing is very risky. I can make the argument that being in an undiversified private equity fund where you don't know the underlying holdings is even riskier. So we spent about a half an hour talking about private equity, around the education around it. What are the different models? How can you handle due diligence? What to look for? And gave them a little bit of a snapshot on the education. I'm also blessed to say that recently CityWire magazine did an article that I printed an article I wrote on the same thing around an alternative investment, private equity, and things to look for. So we're really on a crusade to educate people through things like our podcast here for Top Advisor Marketing, through publications, through conferences, and hand-to-hand combat, Matt. It's one advisor at a time educating them as well. So that's what we're out to do, is if the more education that we can provide, the more light that we can shine on this segment of the industry, the better off it's going to be for advisors, clients, and obviously Third Seven.
How big is your team, and who are the key people on our team that our listeners should either reach out to or know about?
Yeah, you know, we're small and nimble, and we like it that way. You know, the old saying is it takes a lot of water to turn the Titanic. And we want to stay nimble. We have several members of the management team who reach out to, but probably the best way to work with us is we have our website, which allows us to connect with you. Because what we find is that the right person is really dependent on where you are on the education curve. Some of the times, you know, we don't want to put you in front of our deal guys. We're talking specifically about a product like Newcom, which is a meditation and self-help opportunity to directly invest in, when you still don't understand the difference between the cap being invested on the cap table as through a fund structure, or if you haven't done your due diligence. So we really recommend that the point of entry is just reaching out to us via phone or email, and we'll have one of our team members help you, guide you through your own sort of education process to put you in front of the right partners and right people who are leading our deals and can help you on your education curve. So we don't want to take a one size fit all approach, Matt. I know it sounds a little altruistic, but we're really on a crusade to help people get educated, and you can't make a decision without being properly educated.
Now, when it comes to your designations and advanced education, you know, one of the things that you had said was you feel very grateful that you've had the mentors in place. How are you continuing to sharpen your saw, though? I mean, being a CEO of a nimble but aggressive company, what are you doing to keep yourself fresh and motivated and on top and in front of the leadership curve?
Yeah, you know, it's I'm sitting here in my office talking to you, and I turned around, looked at my stack of books, which I'm proud to say are all about leadership and connecting, emotional intelligence, and connecting with people. And they number roughly, close to 100 now that I've read in the past 5+ years. In the sense, because one of the things I always tell myself is that we've never arrived as a leader. It's something that is a constant sharpening of the knife, if you will, of the sword. And that's because every situation will present itself in a different way. And if you think you've already figured it out, then you're not listening. You're just going off of your instincts. Being present in the moment is the key to good leadership, and not relaying on past history, because each circumstance is unique. That's not to say that you don't reference it, but you don't want to necessarily make a judgment in today based off of a previous judgment. Each situation is unique. You can reference it, but don't make it the same decision twice just because it looks the same. Really understand and get thorough. So for me, it's starting off the day the same way I start off every day. Is I get up and I spend 15 to 20 minutes quietly reading what's going on in our industry. What can I read from a leadership perspective? I subscribe to several different folks who are more on the emotional intelligence side. Nothing to do, you know, so I try to balance my reading between industry news And, you know, Daniel Goleman, Dr. Travis Bradbury, folks of that nature and ilk, Simon Sinek, who have been influential in my career in regards to how to look at leadership, how to look at dealing with people and the right way to handle conversations and difficult and moments. So when we get on the phone as a leadership team and even with the board, I try to focus on making sure that we're looking at everything from a unique perspective. It's somewhat of a different perspective, and it's similar to a tack that I've heard that the folks at Amazon use, where they assign essentially one person in each discussion with the leadership group to have a different opinion. So they're regardless of what the topic is, one person's always the contrarian. And so I challenge our leadership team constantly by being the contrarian, even if we know that it's the answer that we want to take, to make sure that we have exhausted every possibility and to make sure that we haven't settled for the easy answer. I am always going to ask the difficult question. It can get grating at times and it can get exhausting, but at least we know when we walk out of the room, we're locked arms and we can fully say that we've discussed whatever issue, regardless of the size. And looked at it from all different perspectives. So that's how we keep each other sharp, and I keep the team sharp, and how I keep myself sharp.
All right, now we're going to switch gears so that everybody has a chance to get to know you better, because as you know, people like to do business with people they like and have things in common with. When you're not working, what do you do?
Yeah, my family is incredibly important to me, spending time with my kids. I'm very involved with their lives. We're a family that likes to be active and is constantly on the move. I coach my kids in sports. So I'll give you an example of what tomorrow will bring. So my son has a soccer game at 8:30. I'm the coach. My daughter has a soccer game at 9:45. I'm the coach. My daughter has a lacrosse game after that at 11:30. I get to be supportive dad. And then we've got another indoor soccer game at 1:00. That's all before 2 p.m. in the afternoon. So we're going to be running pretty hard and fast. And then afterwards, we're going to be getting together and having a barbecue with our neighbors in the backyard and just relaxing and having fun. The kids get to be outside. The grownups get to have a little bit of fun. But we're always on the move. And whether it's sports or just being activity, 2 weekends ago, we went and checked out a local museum because one of my daughters had just done a report on Greece. And the local museum had an exhibit on Greece and Rome. And so we went there and we checked it out. And I got to tell you, taking your kids, all who are under the age of 10, to the museum and being able to get out of there within under 2 hours and not have any meltdowns, it's a pretty impressive task. So, you know, with one parent involved. So, yeah, we get out and we get after it. We're not a sideline family. We're active participants in life.
Who's your hero?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about that, and I it's a tie. It really is a tie. It's a tie, and it's a little, you know, some people will call it cliche, but I'll explain it. But it's a tie between my mom and dad. My mom and dad were both immigrants. They both immigrated from India. Actually, they went to Canada first. My mom was a nurse. Her and her six other friends went to Canada together on a nursing program. They were affectionately referred to as the Seven Sisters. And from there, many of them migrated down to the US. But my dad, they both left. They pursued the American dream, you know, with less than a dollar and a ball of lint in their pocket and went after it and made something of themselves. While we may not have had everything, we never went wanting either. And I got to see a lot about what it means to do hard work. I spent a lot of Saturdays after my own soccer games sitting in front of the TV licking envelopes and stamping the number 341, I'm sorry, the number 43, excuse me, on my on return envelopes for my dad as he was mass mailing as he was an insurance salesman. I spent other Saturdays cutting grass, you know, taking out the trash. You always had enough fun, but you always had responsibility. And whether, you know, you always find yourself clashing with your parents as you grow up. It wasn't until you start thinking about the values and you're hearing yourself say the same things that your parents said to you that you realize the impact that you had. And they always worked hard. My mom worked the graveyard shift for a long time because it meant more money. to do the right things by us. So they always put family first. They always tried to make sure that we were taken care of and that we were never left needing anything. And they made a huge impact on what it makes to be successful, because while they were entrepreneurs in life, and that's a huge, huge deal. And so, yeah, that's why it's a tie.
If you had all of the money in the world that you ever needed, what would you do?
There's a lot of great things that are going on in this world with people who do have the means to do that, whether it's the foundations that Mr. Gates and Buffett are a part of. There are other foundations. But I learned something interesting over the week, over my trip to Panama, about an individual who may not have all the money in the world, but has enough. And he has taken it on, his responsibility to stop the human trafficking of children. And what it just resonated with me is that we have so many children out there in this world who are needing whatever it may be, needing a new path to life, maybe needing out of a terrible situation, maybe just needing food and shelter. Children are my passion. I think it's why I coach soccer. Before I even had kids, Matt, I coached soccer for over 15 years. I coached kids in soccer when I was in college, even. I was a babysitter, ironically, when I was in middle school. I have a huge affinity for helping children. And I would probably try to find as many ways possible to obviously take care of my friends and family. But beyond that is to find a way to help children in every different way possible. So it really just called to me when I heard that around that sort of commitment that I would want to make a difference with helping kids in whatever way I could.
Who's your favorite person in history and why?
You know, the first person in history that I gravitated towards was Abraham Lincoln. I remember, again, I'm going to date myself again, Matt. I remember having to do a book report for him and pulling out the Encyclopedia Britannica. Do you remember that?
My grandparents had our family's copy of that. So yes, I'm quite familiar.
I still remember the day when they came around and sold us the set of encyclopedias door to door. And I was so excited to have them because it was supposed to fill the universe of everything out there, right? In a book. But I remember reading about Lincoln and how he was, while he may not have been the most charismatic, and he was someone who actually failed many times in seeking his political office, he was committed, and he was committed to making the world, not only his world, but the world, the United States, a better place. And it resonated with me that he was on there. I also really found it interesting that he is the president that we choose to put on a penny. You know, our 16th president, but he's on a penny. And I kind of made up my own reason why, is because we view him as the number one president. George Washington's on the dollar bill. I know that. But, you know, in some ways, he's 1A. So that's why he got the penny. You know, 1 and 1A. You can't choose between your kids, right? That's 1 and 1A, 1B. I felt like Lincoln made a big impact around how he tried to impact the world around him, and was also very persistent and committed to his cause and didn't give up even in the face of adversity, not being successful more than once.
Now, you just used the word success, which is my next question. How do you define success?
Now, success for me is defined through the success of others. I had one of my first earliest mentors taught me that lesson, a gentleman who I do want to mention by name, Lee Dolan, who I worked with. He was one of the business unit leaders at SEI and took a liking to, a young man from Boston College who was basically a no one and for whatever reason took to me. And Lee was an incredibly successful man throughout his career, someone who I still am close to today and meet with, you know, at least once a quarter. But Lee was really clear in saying success for him was defined through the success of others. And it really resonated with me. And from that moment on, it was really clear that if the people around you are successful, then by definition, you'll be a success. So if you want to make more money, make sure the people around you are making more money. If you want to see the company be successful, make sure the people around you are successful. So if I'm doing everything I can to empower and clear the roadblocks, if you will, for people who are working with me and are my partners and trying to get their jobs done, and they end up being successful, I'll be a success. So that's probably the easiest question you've asked me so far.
Awesome. Well, the next one, you've got all those books behind you, so I don't know how hard this is going to be, but what is that one thing that you recommend most to family, friends, or clients? Now, this can be, it can be a book, it can be a TED talk, it can be a video, it can be, I don't know, a mantra. What do you got?
Give me 1 second as I peruse my shelves here. You know, yeah, this is what I was going to do. This was the book that I was thinking of, and I wanted to make sure of it. But the book that I think really kind of started the shift for me in regards to the leadership reading and the emotional intelligence and trying to become a better human being was Start With Why, which is a book by Simon Sinek. And there is a TED Talk for those of you who are interested, Matt. There's Simon Sinek, the Start With Why. It's around the golden circle. And there's a 15-minute version and there's a shorter version for 5 minutes out there that you can see on YouTube, and I highly recommend it. We were lucky at a previous firm to have a relationship with Simon Sinek. He came and gave a talk, signed a couple books, and we were able to work with him closely, and I learned a lot. But the Start With Why book is really kind of a great one because it helps you answer a simple question or helps you figure out a simple question. So, and the easiest way I can do is describe it this way. Matt, if I asked you what you could do, you would be able to tell me. If I asked you how you do what you do, you could still probably tell me. Might be a little bit harder, but you could still do it. But if I ask the average person why do you do what you do? Why are you a client service associate? Why are you a receptionist? Why are you a regional director? Why are you a CEO? That's a different question. Most people are motivated and by their why, but they don't even know what it is. I'll give you a great example. I worked with an advisor in the past. In a previous life, I had a role where I did business consulting practice management, and we were having this conversation. This was an advisor who was extremely successful, over $600 million, and he was a machine. And what I mean by that is he would get up every morning at 4 o'clock. He would do some readings. Religious man, and then he would go out and work out from 5 to 6, and he would get off from his work, he would be with his kids, and he'd head to the office and start his day, and he would do as many meetings as you possibly could, speak to as many people as you possibly can, then go out and network at night, and he was an absolute animal in the most positive sense of the word. Very humble man, but he was a machine, and if you were to ask his team, what do they know about him, they would say Greg's the most driven man they knew. But they didn't know a lot about him. And so I was in a meeting with him and his team. And I asked him, Greg, why are you a financial advisor? And I'm going to paraphrase the story. But he said, I was raised by a single mom. And every month we would walk down to the bank. I'd hold her hand. We'd walk down our bank. And she would go ahead and put her saving, take her paycheck and put it into a CD, a one-month CD. After doing this for months and months and years, I finally said to her, Mom, why do you do that? Why do you invest your money in a CD every month? And she turned to Greg and said, because I don't know what else to do with my money.
Oh.
And Greg said in that moment, he knew he wanted to help people just like his mom understand what they could do and what their options were with their money. Now, if you could have seen You just made an audible noise for me, Matt. If you could have seen the faces, the body language, the sounds, and frankly, some of the emotion that was driven out of that room when this guy who was a machine, like clockwork, these people didn't even know anything about Greg personally. When they heard this, it was amazing. It was a complete shift. And so it went from a conversation of, you know, the receptionist saying, why, what do you do? Why? Well, I work at, you know, XYZ firm because it's my job to answer the phone, to saying, I work with a guy who wants to help people know what they do with their money, just like he did for his mom. And that was off the cuff.
Mm-hmm.
it changes everything. It changes your mentality. It shifts the way you look at the world, your life, your job, everything. The power of why is massively impactful. And your why for yourself and for your business is something that you most people have within themselves. And everyone's why is different, but they haven't necessarily tapped into it. And when I said to Greg, how many times have you shared that story when you meet with a client as to why you do what you do? He said, never. You know, he completely shifted his practice because it created a human element, and it was something that absolutely connected with people, and they understood who he was, and it made an extremely successful advisor a $1 billion advisor, which I think is pretty impressive and pretty cool.
You know, this is a marketing based podcast, right? And sometimes when I ask people questions like this, you know, we're able to tease out some really good marketing stuff. But what you just said there in that epiphany moment, not just for you, but for that advisor and that team, if you aren't able to communicate your why, you need to find somebody to help you figure that out, because it does absolutely change everything. I love stories like that. That's one of the things that we try to do at Top Advisor Marketing is uncover those stories. That's one of the reasons why storytelling or podcasting is such a powerful way to do that. Could you imagine if that advisor did a podcast and before he met with clients, he sent that out and told that story? Just how powerful that would be as a relationship builder, because people want to know that you care beyond what everybody cares about. So we're running out of time here. So I'm gonna rapid fire the next two questions, and then I want everybody to be able to connect with you. So number one, what is one thing that most people don't know about you that's okay for you to share on this show?
Yeah, I probably one thing that I've mentioned a couple of times now is that, you know, I've coached soccer for over 15 years. And I currently coach my oldest daughter and my my only son in coaching, and I enjoy it tremendously. What else they probably don't know, my daughter, she reminded me of this, is that I also used to be a trumpet player, and I used to be in the marching band and the jazz band and the concert band, and I love good jazz music as a result of it. So I have a great appreciation for musical instruments. I wasn't as good as many, but I did enjoy it tremendously.
What is your mantra, motto, or something you say to yourself to keep you focused and on track when things go awry?
I'll answer it two ways. Is, you know, one thing, you know, once I was asked, you know, what would you tell your younger self? You know, I said, life isn't that complicated. Focus on what makes you happy and worry less about what others think of you. And it's a paraphrase of a famous quote. But, you know, the other thing I say always to people is there's three simple rules in life. If you don't go after what you want, you'll never have it. If you don't ask, the answer will always be no. And if you do not step forward, then you'll always be in the same place.
All right. So you do have the attention of many, many people, and you do things that I've never had anybody on who does what you do. So that's super awesome. So if you're a financial services professional and you're like, okay, you know what? I've been looking for this opportunity to truly separate myself from the advisor down the street by using the different third seven businesses, I should say, but Amit and his team are going to be the people that you begin to connect with. What is the best way for everybody to reach out to you to find out more about engaging your services?
Yeah, so I'll give you a website that goes a lot deeper than we had a chance to today, Matt. That's really good, and it's four words, but they're all pushed together. growwiththirdseven.com.
Okay.
That's it. So out of there, you can reach out to us, but it gives you a great opportunity to learn more about how we differentiate ourselves and work with advisors and their clients alike, and how you can access what Third Seven does. And the simple answer is, whether you're a breakaway advisor, whether you're an existing IBD at a broker dealer, whether you're purely independent today, we work with all of you. We don't care to how you want to affiliate economically. We'll figure that out. We're open to all, whether you want to launch an RIA, whether you already are an RIA, we're happy to work with you, whether you want to be on our corporate ADV. The answer is always yes from that perspective. That's what I'm fond of saying, but we think that we can help you differentiate yourself. And that's what we'd like to hang our hat on.
Amit, thank you so much for being a great guest on the show.
Matt, thanks for having me on again.
Amit Dogra, who is the CEO of Third Seven Advisors. If you're looking for you know, somebody who is going to have you be able to offer a lot of those things that are going to be talked about at your dinner parties, this is the way to do it. So for everybody at Third 7, if you have not subscribed to the podcast, click that subscribe now button below. Or if you know another financial services professional who should hear this information, just go ahead and share it. And if you don't mind, take 2 seconds and give us a quick review on iTunes. That will help us out a whole bunch and also give us an opportunity to find out what you like and what you don't. So for everybody at Third 7 and Top Advisor Marketing, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Are you ready to change the way you communicate with your clients? Are you tired of being the best kept secret in your area? Learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your business. Contact us today and see what the power of podcasting can do for your business. Click on the Contact Us link on our website at topadvisormarketing.com and set up a call to learn more. Follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook for more updates and information.
This was brought to you by Iris.xyz, a platform helping financial professionals become better in business and life through new media and new voices. Visit them and learn more at Iris.xyz.